Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Milman.
Hello, I'm here.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Now, I wanted to kickstart a conversation that will be happening for the rest of this year, for the most part across 2020, which is just the general sort of trying to answer the idea of what is the best game of the decade. Now, we've done a whole load of these things across the last few years, decades so far type stuff. What are you shaking your face?
There's just so many.
There are so many. Because you can go all the way back to 2010, which is obviously the year that Red Dead Redemption came out. And it just, you kind of have that sort of cross-generational thing. So we've done the cream of the crop. We've done an initial first pass to get these things off the ground, because we'll do way more of these videos across the rest of the year. We'll do tons in 2020. But I just like seeing what different people come up with as to the answer of what the best game of the decade is. So we're just going to run down our choices. We have 9 games and we'll just see how we go. Obviously, there'll be stuff that we've missed. That's where you come in down in the comments, or you can come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio stuff. But the first one that we've got is Mass Effect 2.
Yes. One that we can actually all agree on,
I know.
Is awesome.
I think we all agree on all of these.
Well, we'll see.
Well, we'll see.
Oh, God, not this again.
I think it's in full agreement.
Right, doesn't matter. For now, we are all in agreement that Mass Effect 2 is one of the best games of the decade,
yes.
And in my opinion, of all time.
I would totally agree. I think it's one of the best sequels in terms of taking the things that you got from the first game and extrapolating them out. For me, Mass Effect 2 is the one that I find the easiest to go back to. For me, it plays the best. I think I love the whole setup of you coming back from the dead and sort of amassing this little ragtag group of warriors or whatever to go and try and fight the collectors. For me, that's the one that I go to. If I think of Mass Effect, I tend to think of Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
This was your pick as well, Ash.
Oh, 100%. Mass Effect 2 is the best Mass Effect game and also the best game ever. So it's going to come on the list.
Hey, there's something else down here as well that might also be one of the best games ever.
Maybe. But no, Mass Effect 2 is it's wonderful. It differs from the other two games in that it is basically, I've said this before, it's like side quest the game because you're just going out and making friends and doing nice things across the galaxy. The galaxy might be like almost about to explode and be taken over by loads of aliens, but you're just going out having a nice time, making friends with everyone.
It's not exploding yet, you know what I mean? They're using the best of their final moments to chill out on their little spaceship and, make best buds with their companions, and then maybe stop a few collectors if they have time on a suicide mission. But, it's difficult, it's hard, and it's awesome. It's a great sequel.
Hard.
Yeah.
What?
What, you're telling me your first run through Mass Effect 2, everyone survived?
Yeah.
Well, I actually know.
No. But I didn't know. I thought you were saying the whole game was quite hard. The suicide mission's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Although only one. I think Kelly Chambers died. Rest her soul.
Rest
and
in
I can't
peace.
Think. I think Morden. Did he? Morden?
You killed Morden.
I killed Morden on the first run.
I think
Morden. Well, because there's that weird way that they engineer it so that people have to die at the end of it, where you can nominate someone to, there's some bit where you nominate some character to help you get through like a certain chasm full of enemies or whatever, and at the end of it, they're closing a door on enemies, and a whole bunch of bullets come through, and they kill whichever character is holding that door. So even though it has nothing to do with their speciality or anything, for me, Morden was the guy holding that door. And I remember feeling robbed.
You can win that, because everyone can survive.
Well, yeah, they totally can.
Zaidi died for me there, though.
Okay, so he's a DLC.
The DLC character.
He's no one anyway.
Hate him.
But in terms of what Mass Effect 2 is sort of like, the reason that it... I don't know, like, I guess trying to nail down like why it's sort of regarded as one of the best like games of all time or whatever. It's kind of that feel that you're exploring an actual galaxy of potential. Like, especially at the beginning, I forget what the name of that main hub city is.
Citadel.
Yeah.
No, not the Citadel.
Omega?
It might be Omega. The one that's like the, it's more like the underground. You see a whole lot of different criminals coming together and it's like the big trade port. And it's that Star Wars feel of like, this must be this like nexus where all these different places and races and different cultures are all coming together. I remember that feeling. It's kind of very Star Wars. It's very archetypal sci-fi. But yeah, so the next one down is The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Which is also, this
it's
might
the best
be my
game
one.
Of all, time.
All of these are also the best game of all time. For me, The Witcher might be my number one. I don't know yet. I want to see how I go. But what do you guys think of The Witcher? I think it's just for me, it's that is the fantasy game of the generation.
It's the best, like we keep saying, it's the best game of all time. It might not be there for me, but I remember playing The Witcher 2 and really enjoying that and getting into the world and getting to know Geralt and sort of his life and his backstory and thinking it was pretty decent. I thought it was a relatively good RPG. I enjoyed the story. But The Witcher 3 just blew my socks off getting into that and realizing that you could have a sort of huge open world but also have it so intricately detailed. Because even though, you know, it's quite a few years old now, before The Witcher 3, I feel like when it came to sandbox games, unless you were Bethesda, you didn't really have sort of that pristine level of detail and graphical finesse to sort of back up, you know, the openness and freedom of the open world itself, whereas this merged the two with great storytelling and yet great sort of player-driven kind of exploration and combat in just a perfect way. And you just got to know those characters and sort of live in that world for a little bit. And just, I have so much affection for that title. And I went back and played the Blood and Wine DLC. I haven't actually done the other one. I haven't done that yet, actually. I bought it a while ago and I need to go back and completely The Witcher 3.
You really do.
But that big expansion is also awesome. Like, the bang for your buck in that game is just incredible.
Speaking of, like you said, like bang for your buck stuff, the Blood and Wine expansion, the whole thing of Toussaint, the additional like region, any other developer would have done that as a whole separate game.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of ludicrous how much stuff is in there. But Ash, what do you think of The Witcher 3?
Oh, I really like it. I think Josh has encapsulated it perfectly there. Like, you go in and you see all these different people and the way that it's so intricately detailed, it feels like you're actually there, like you're in there and you can go and live there and spend hours and hours in there and not see everything and have to come back and want to do other different things and get different playthroughs and different ways you want to have Geralt be, and all that affects the world as well, which I think is all that you can ask for from these sort of massive open world games, is true immersion. And it feels like you are Geralt. You do have to go to the Northern Realms. There is the Wild Hunt on the loose. Oh my god, it's very scary. But yeah, no, I just think it's so good. It's
There's
so well
that,
put
like,
together.
I think that it nails like more than hardly any other games of that scope sort of do, which is that Geralt makes sense in a story context. He has a role. He has different, you know, like friendship circles and things that he has to get done, like you said, the Wild Hunt or taking care of Ciri. But he's also, because of his history and being stripped of emotion or whatever, you can just deviate off and do a whole bunch of like beast contracts or explore and stuff. And I can't think of any other sort of protagonist that manages to walk that line.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about Mass Effect before, and like in Mass Effect 3, or that idea in 2 of like, you know, the universe needs saving or whatever, but I'm going to go and do all this side stuff. So many games fall down in that way. And I was going to hold The Witcher 3 up as like, the way that Geralt's designed is that he kind of feels like he's both. He's kind of, he's not empty, but he is sort of, like I said, he's stripped of emotion, but he also kind of has a whole ton of agency. Also, like you said about the design of the world, all the background stuff changes, which I didn't even notice going through it the first time, but like Novigrad and all, like as the war plays out in the background, like you see the actual design of the world change, which is just a great thing. Do you think that like with The Witcher 3, CDPR have like kind of usurped Bethesda? We'll get onto Bethesda, but like,
shift in the seat from Josh.
Because Bethesda have been like gaming royalty for so long, but CDPR this generation just came in and just absolutely blew everybody away.
I think they're what Bethesda want to be.
Yeah.
Like 100%.
I think so as well. I mean, you know, they did. Bethesda has always used the excuse for their kind of buggy games and their kind of, you know, potentially shoddy game design in places, because it's open world, it's free, you can do whatever you want. You can shoot that guy there, you can kill this guy, that quest can be locked off, you can do all this crazy stuff. But The Witcher showed that you can do that, but still have a pristinely, for the most part, polished title that just looks and plays so well.
The Battle of Kaer Morhen as well is like one of the best set pieces in any open world game, where they slow it down and they make it all character focused, and it's like, I can't think, like something like a GTA or like a Division, Assassin's Creed, like they very rarely manage to deliver what would be a AAA, you know, story-driven game's worth of a set piece. But The Witcher completely pulls that stuff off.
What I love, before we end up moving on, is that I remember, I still have a mate now who I didn't even know was into games, and I suppose he's not really, but I remember he was around mine and I was playing The Witcher 3, and he was just sort of about like, he was like, hey, what's this? This looks really good. Next thing I know, he'd bought it, like played all the way through it. We were talking about the different choices we made and what happened here. And yeah, I just thought that was so cool. Like, we bonded over that in a way that we never really talked before. And I thought, this is awesome. This game has sort of unlocked a part of a friendship I didn't know was kind of accessible.
There's also, just to tag on that like side of it as well, in terms of the choices, like that game, Witcher 3 isn't necessarily known in the way that like a Telltale game is or whatever, of a game that prioritizes choices, because it does it all in the background. But at the very end of it, when you realize like what sort of like father figure you've been to Ciri, where like the game actually was tracking all your dialogue choices and all these like meaningful things that you did with Ciri over time, that The Witcher 3 is like certainly one of the best like sort of story, you know, like, I don't know, choose your own adventure type games or whatever, this generation. Next up is God of War, which like Witcher 3 and God of War are my top two for the generation. I know we're talking about decade, but still, I just, God of War is like immaculate.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's so good.
Is it the best game ever, mate?
I think it's the best game ever.
I think it might be.
I just, it's so, everything about it, again, it's everything that The Witcher has with immersion and taking this whole fantastical world and crafting it into something new, original, and deeply immersive, but also not too long, like perfectly paced, so you're not like slogging your way through or rushing through thinking, oh, I wish there was more. There's open world aspects, so you can go and do a bit of exploring if you want to. Sorry, somebody sneezed and really shook
Someone
me there.
Sneezed off cam. Anyway.
In a separate room.
No,
it came through.
But yeah, no, that you can go off and do your open world stuff and come back. And then there's this whole like important, scary narrative running through the middle. But again, that balances the whole, oh, if I want to go off and do stuff, it doesn't matter to the main story because I've got like an invisible sigil on my head so nobody can see what I'm doing. Like, I think that the way that it balances everything is so good. And the way that it plays into Norse Norse mythology and utilizes it as a leaping point for its own ideas that it then spins in a different direction that hasn't been done before is also fantastic. Like, taking mythology and turning it into something new, it, oh, I'll stop speaking.
You're a big fan. I think just to quickly mention the game's design, like at the very end of that game, the way that it ties off its story, actually its ending, quote unquote, story-wise, actually propels you to keep doing the open world stuff, which I love. I love a game that actually understands a way to meaningfully transition into an end game. Like, so many things, even Borderlands 3 is like a recent example. They're out there ahead of launch going, well, this is going to be the end game. And, you know, you get this out of the way and then you do the end game stuff. And it's like the way that God of War does it, like, gives you a reason to go do all those extra things.
Yeah.
And I'd love that there's little pockets of like time-tested traditional design tropes, like the way that those side areas are put together, where it's like, you know, you go down a certain like area or whatever and you unlock something, you double back on yourself, you realize that you have a new path now open or whatever. Those things are so like Metroidvania, but they're just peppered in and it's like Nintendo style, like, you know, genre, like entire genres have came from these ideas, and it's just, God of War is kind of an amalgamation of all the best things gaming can do in one place.
Yeah,
God of War's really good.
It's really good. I agree, it was one of those games that I sort of didn't want to leave. I love it. I think I love it slightly less than you guys, but it's still definitely a contender for game of the generation, because I didn't have much affinity for this franchise before this sort of semi-reboot. And then I was suddenly on board with it and I wanted to go back and play all the games. And I like what you said there, Ash, when it's sort of, you have a game, and we'll get to this probably more as we go down the list, but with this, it sort of enraptured me, like, totally. It got me interested in Norse mythology, and I was thinking about buying a big old Norse mythology book that I obviously didn't end up doing.
I did.
I did. I thought about getting it and reading it, because I was just so engrossed, not just in Kratos' story and Atreus' story, but the wider ramifications of the God of War series and the themes and ideas it was drawing from. And I love it when a piece of media, whether it's games or movies or TV or whatever, just sort of puts you in a world that you want to sort of branch off and explore more things from it.
You made such a great point about like thematics and Kratos and the past series as well, because the way that there's a whole other dimension to why I love this game, and it's that they directly address what God of War used to be as a series. Kratos, what he used to be, this just kind of one dimensional rage monster. Like, he's been described as just a rage face before, like a rage emoji. And so going into God of War, the new one, it was like, well, what can they even do with that? But with the same developers behind it, it's like, well, they've grown and matured, and they know what sort of role video game violence played in escapism and entertainment and whatever. And the way that they write the new Kratos, where he knows that he messed up and he knows that he's a broken person who doesn't really deserve like the love of Atreus and things like that. It's just, there's a whole other like philosophical bent to the way that that game comes together that I absolutely love, and it's right where we are in gaming right now.
Just heartwarmed.
So good. That and Uncharted 4, although Uncharted 4 isn't on our list. Not for this pass anyway, maybe for another one. Next game down is GTA 5, which I think is the thing that Josh thought that I was going to disagree with.
Hello. I think you might disagree with this, because
I just, yeah, one.
Your opinions on GTA are well documented in this office.
In video form.
I think GTA 5 is genuinely incredible. And I think there's a reason that a lot of people are still playing it now and why it still breaks into the top. Not only breaks into the top 10 best-selling games of each month, but is all often well up there.
It's I think it's still in the top 10.
It's in the top 10, but sometimes it's in the top 5. Sometimes it's right up there. It's making a ridiculous amount of money. And for me, while the story of GTA 5 is still something quite special, it's all in the online mode. I have so many fond, unique memories of playing GTA Online with my friends and just creating these stories that I just wouldn't get from any other game or any other online game. It really is a sort of freedom-driven, sort of player-driven sandbox where you can do whatever you want, and there is a real sort of chance that you will come across an emergent piece of gameplay that no one else will have experienced before you. Yeah, there are set lobbies and there are heists and all that's really good, but it's those weird little memories that will make me that make it one of the games of the generation for me. I remember booting it up with my mate, and again, it was someone I hadn't really played games with, and we got to connect over this title, and we dressed up as the guys from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, bought the same car, and we would go around robbing banks as if we were those guys, because I just read that book at the time, and I love that any game
the
that
lets
me
you
do that
is great.
Yeah, the fact that it lets me do that, that's just one sort of mini story that I have from these past, what, coming up 6 years of GTA Online that I will cherish forever.
Because my thing with GTA, which is something that Niggy Jakey is a separate YouTuber, there's a whole video on how the old school GTA games used to be way more about sandbox stuff in terms of you could sort of like, you know, figure out a way through any given mission. It was like, okay, go kill this person. You figure out however you want to do it. Like maybe you plan a, maybe you put a car in the way of their getaway car so that when they try and get away, they get stuck and you can run in with your machine gun or whatever. And there were kind of all these different ways to interact with the main missions that the newer Rockstar games have kind of gotten away from. But that level of experimentation and just faffing around with the physics is all in GTA Online. And the mission goals tend to be more abstract in online as well, where it's like, just, you know, save this one person and just get from A to B. And however you do that, you can. So it's like you end up getting to the checkpoint in like a biplane or something, even though you were supposed to just drive there. And in terms of GTA 5, the main city, like, yeah, I bounced right off the characters and stuff. But I think in terms of like a sheer technical achievement, like that game's city and the detail is ludicrous.
I know some of the streets in that city better than I know my streets in Newcastle. I could like direct people around that version of, it's definitely Los Santos. I'm just saying how much I love it now. I can't remember what it's called. But
still,
I could direct people around it, you know, off like rote memory.
But it's like, because for me, comparing it to the old games, they really matured it. They really, because did you play much GTA 5?
I have dibbled and dabbled in GTA. It's always been a franchise that has never really appealed to me, and also that I've never really wanted to invest much time in. What I have played of it, I think, is fantastic, and I think it's like a legendary piece of video game lore and all that sort of thing. But it's not particularly my style of thing. Yeah. I can look at it and go, wow, yeah, that's a really good game. That's like, that's really nice. But I just kind of
That was kind of my thing overall with GTA 5, is that I didn't think it drew me in. There's a weird sort of like caricatured, like over animated sensibility to the old games where they were like way more over the top, that I found it easier to get into, especially with the certain time regions and eras that they focused on and stuff. But and for like, you know, sheer amount of video game and things that they pull off and the a level of detail in that world and ways that you can have fun with it, GTA 5 is like a monolithic release. We've got another Rockstar game down here as well, but yeah, GTA 5 is a hell of a thing. Next game down is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I almost forgot to put on, because I think I'm just thinking of newer stuff from the last couple of years, which would include that too. But yeah, Breath of the Wild like is like a sublime, just everything I love about video games, sort of condensed into sort of into one game. It's just, it's completely effortless. It's kind of magic. The way that it lets you explore its entire world, it's so lush.
My favorite thing is just the Korok seeds. Like, literally just go and collect that. I think any game that can banter you off that well, like whilst playing it, make him play more, then give you an actual poo at the end. Like, I think it's got my respect.
That's
best game.
You get.
Best game of all time, to be honest.
At the end of that whole thing, we didn't even say that about the last game, GTA 5, best game of all time. But yeah, Breath of the Wild, if you do all the side stuff and that particular thing, all you get is a nice little sort of memorable poo, which isn't
and
the
that's
best
all
thing.
You need, because it's the satisfaction of getting that memorable poo that's, you know, that's the most rewarding
if
part.
You ate that 600 seeds, you'd need a poo.
But in terms of one of the things that I, like I said, I love the fact that it's the way that you sort of move around that game, you can just climb anything. For me, it kind of made me rethink what an open world could even be. It's like this entire open world is one big level. I can climb anywhere and jump off anything, and like all these different enemy, like pockets of enemies all over the place. And it just, there's this a level of sheer playability to that game that I don't think anything else has. You just, it just goes from beginning to end. And you're always having fun with it. And it's like the whole sort of like meta narrative of like Hyrule needs saving, and you're like, you have this memory loss thing, and you don't really unlock any abilities after the initial set of powers, but you get better at using them. You become the hero. Like, it's like, it's that thing where it was in you the whole time, but you needed to learn how to get better. And it's like that, when that all comes full circle and you storm Hyrule Castle and you go to save the whole realm, and that theme is on in the background. Like, it's gorgeous.
It is. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I was a non-believer until I finally got a Switch way late in the game, finally got Breath of the Wild way late in the game, and then just decided that I loved it. It's the best game of all time.
It might be. Awesome. I think they're all the best game of all time.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you when you were talking about the its approach to sort of open world level design, because it does feel like one big level, and it's one of the few games we talk about all the time. I think it was the one of the Destiny's producers who sort of went like, you know, look at that mountain, you can go to that mountain, and that is true in Breath of the Wild. If you see a mountain, you can go to it, you can try to climb it, you might not get up there, it might start raining, you might sort of fall down, but you can try it, and eventually you will get up that mountain.
I need your address. Let it be known, I need your address on cam somewhere, that you can, the whole the rain problem that everyone cites with Breath of the Wild, you can totally overcome that. You can either get the climbing. You gotta get the climbing gear. You can get the ability that you jump really high, or you just climb in 5 animation bursts, and then he doesn't slip as much.
While we're on,
go on.
Weapon durability. Yeah. That's all right as well. I don't really mind. It encourages you to use different items, and then you have a fun time. You pick things up off the battlefield. Whoa, it's boomerang. Meow 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 meow. It's really good.
I know there's a whole thing. These are the two most common criticisms levied at Breath of the Wild. Oh, it's not perfect because it has the. Oh, if it rains, you can't climb. You can. You just need to try harder. And the whole thing with the weapon durability thing, like you said, one, it encourages you to try, I'm going. It encourages you to try a much bigger variety of weapons. And if your thing comes up saying it's about to break, you just throw it for double damage. Yep. So you might as well have fun with it.
Yeah, Ash.
I've like had to step away from both these two entries. I'm like, the other side of it is you pair, and I'm like,
I would love to
do a
focused 10-minute thing where I just rant on about, because these criticisms have been there for like 2 years now, and every time I'm sitting in my chair going, it's not true. It's
just
not that
bad. Just put your raincoat on, guys.
Just learn how to jump. Yeah, but anyway, Breath of the Wild, very, very good game. One of the best games of all time. Next thing down is Red Dead Redemption 2, although we've also added Red Dead Redemption 1 because that game was in 2010.
Yeah.
So out of the two, Josh, you should talk about Red Dead 2. Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, definitely too. That's my, it might be my, I think this is, we've for every single entry so far we've gone, this is the best game of all time, or this is the best game of the decade. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 is my pick for number one of really the entire generation of the entire decade, because I love it so. I think about it daily. I don't play it daily. I think about Red Dead Redemption 2 on the daily, because I just
I thought you were kidding
the,
when you said that.
No, seriously.
Just I was, got Arthur on the mind.
Yeah, I've got Arthur on the mind. I was thinking about it last night, because I was watching a Western yesterday, yeah. And I thought, oh my God, I can see where Red Dead Redemption 2 has plucked from this and, you know, interpreted this way. But anyway, I love it for the exact opposite reason that I love GTA 5, because this, to me, is the perfect solo experience. We were talking about The Witcher 3 before and how it encourages you to just sort of live in its world and be a part of its world. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 does that same thing, but slightly in a different way, because it's not really an RPG. And yet you sort of, at least I did, I came at it as if it was an RPG, as if I was playing as Arthur, which I obviously am. But I was sort of making decisions based on what I thought his personality was, and I was choosing his clothes based on his plight at the time. I was growing his beard out because he was living in the woods. I was really into the minutiae of his day-to-day activities, and I didn't mind just going on for 2 hours and having a, you know, a fish, or going hunting and bringing back to the camp and providing for the camp. When I first jumped into it, I wanted it to be more like Red Dead Redemption 1. I wanted it to be more instantaneous, or like a GTA, instantaneous with its action and get to the point or whatever. And then I realized the point's kind of just the world and the characters, and I didn't mind sitting around the campfire listening to a song play out, which I would never do in another game. I might jump in for 10 seconds and get the gist of it, then nick off. But here I really did care about everyone, even the absolute idiots who ended up betraying me at the end. And I, when it finished, I felt satisfied, but also kind of like something, a part of me had left, because you play something
you're like
else.
Mourning for this game
mourning,
every day since.
I'm mourning for our friend, your friend and mine.
We all went through it at the same time. I think, actually, we finished about the same time.
No, I think I started it. I started it like a week after you guys, and you'd plowed through it for the first time. So you'd like, you like completed my mission, then went back and carried on whilst I like slowly eked it out, like as I carried on. But
didn't Scott spoil Red Dead
Redemption? Yeah, he did spoil it.
Oh, you want to go on record? I spoiled it for myself.
He did. He sent me a picture of a cat. He sent me a lovely picture of a cat whilst writing up an article on a big spoiler of Arthur's story. and his laptop was there with the headline, and then a cat sat in front of it. And I was like, nice cat. I went and looked at it. I was like, oh, good,
No, why did you look at the screen? I said you were a cat.
There was a cat next to it. But yeah,
of all the people to focus on a cat, I thought you'd focus on the cat, Ashmill.
I did,
not.
And I thought, haha, look at the cat in front of the screen.
I'll just see what he's writing.
I thought you were doing a gag. But the joke was on me.
It was.
But anyway.
To this day.
Red Dead Redemption 2, great game. I have all the problems with it for the reasons you like it, because I just find it, I find it tedious.
Well, I mean, you actually don't like spending an hour trying to, you know, do a fish and then, you know,
carry a hay bale from one side to
another.
Carry
a hay bale and then refilling the water tanks from the little pond. And also, you know, carrying back a deer that's on your horse. But it might decay if you don't get there in
time. They all starve thanks to me. I was like, no, I'm not feeding you guys. Like, go and do something. Stop dancing around this camp. Every time like a slow thing happened, like with, you know, when you have like those party nights and you have to like dance around with everyone and talk to them all. I hated it. I was like, literally, I was like, come on, we're going to go to sleep and get on with the game.
You didn't like the parties though?
No, I actually didn't like the parties. I thought Red Dead Redemption 2 was one of my favourite games that I played. I was like, oh my God, I didn't realise gaming could be this deep, this wonderful, this intense. And I still really respect it and think it's a fantastic game. Like, it's still like a favourite.
Yeah.
But as soon as I played some other things afterwards, I was like, that was way too slow for me.
Yeah, I think, like, I remember, that's why I mentioned this finishing at the same time, because I thought I remember having conversations about, like, you feel how sluggish that game is.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it is so deliberate that I've described it in articles and stuff as like, it's kind of virtual reality without a VR headset because it is so deliberate. And there's something about it that instills like that need that you said about, like, you want to go and like maintain his facial hair and get a certain set of clothing and you want to live with a certain pace, and they really, it all comes from all the different animations and the way you can have dialogue with everybody, and I do love that side of it, but there is also the other side where it is quite sluggish and deliberate and like it wants to take its time. It's like an old western, it's like Once Upon a Time in the West that isn't going to get there until it gets there, like, you know. And there is like a recommendable pace to that, which I guess, to throw in Red Dead Redemption 1, that game is the more gamified version of that experience. It, there's no sort of, you're not going off to live in the woods because something bad just happened with like a certain character's wife or like whatever. It's more just, here's the gameplay, you can go. And for me, I prefer Red Dead 1.
Yeah.
And I think that by the end of Red Dead 1, I've never had a game instill a need to go find an NPC and literally enact revenge. Mm. Like, and it's completely of your own accord. Like Red Dead Redemption 1 ends and you could totally think you're done with the story. But if you, of your own accord, go to one of the cities and track down the person who killed your father, you can literally find that guy and that's the true ending. And I remember finding that out for the first time being like, that's phenomenal. Yeah. Like no game's ever instilled that before. But yeah, people can argue about Red Dead 1 versus 2 for the rest of time. And we'll put a marker on it at some point when we finally do a proper list version of this. But whatever, next game down is The Last of Us, which was the best game on the PS3.
Best game of all time,
it might be the best game of all time, to be honest.
I don't know, best game of all time.
But God of War was on there before.
Yeah.
Last of Us is best.
Oh.
See, this is, and when you said, oh, this is my pick for Red Dead Redemption 2, I was like, but Last of Us is coming up.
Last of Us is pretty glad to... You know what? Okay, this is also the best game of all time. Yeah, I agree.
But still, I mean, in terms of The Last of Us, a lot of people obviously hold it up because of the storytelling and the way that those characters are portrayed and like that, obviously that massive emotional gut punch at the very beginning of it. And I totally see the counter argument that the best moments in The Last of Us are in the cutscenes. But I do think it's backed up with the gameplay. I do love the survivability stuff. I love playing as Joel. I don't think you would get the connection between Joel and Ellie if it wasn't meted out across like 15-ish hours or however long it is, which directly factors into the ending and Joel, like, I remember realizing as I wrote up The Last of Us on something else a little while ago that at the very beginning, control is very much taken away from him. He's trying to save his daughter, Sarah, and you know she gets killed by this soldier at the very beginning. At the very end, when he storms the room with Ellie in the operating room, he very much takes control back, away from you as the player, and Joel on screen decides to save Ellie and kill one of the surgeons. And it's up to you whether you like, you know, run him out of the room or whatever. But I love in a meta way that Joel himself, as an entity in the game, decides to get, no, I'm going to do this. Like, I lost one daughter, I can't lose another one. I think it's because of all of that. For me, it all comes together, though. I do see the whole cutscene thing, but you guys love a bit of The Last of Us 2.
Oh, Last of Us 2?
2's later as well, I meant.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That makes sense.
It's 4 p.m.
T-double-O.
Almost.
Last of Us is fantastic. Obviously, I only played it recently compared to when it actually came out, and I feel
we berated you to play it.
Yeah, exactly. And it was worth it, honestly. You slapped me about and said, play this game. And I did, and it was so, so good. Like, even knowing what was going to happen and everything, it still has that absolute, just that core gameplay that sucks you in. And again, it's another one with an original premise, an original way of doing it that like immerses you fully in a world that you then want to play out as Joel and Ellie and see how their relationship develops and find everything and go and look at all these dilapidated buildings and clickers and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to look at everything, so I was like, wow, that's really good. Like that, I like the design of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, we'll see like how Naughty Dog are going to sort of pick up the story threads or whatever and continue it. Initially, I really didn't want more The Last of Us, but as I've sort of delved into it a bit more and pulling out the ramifications of what does it mean to have one person that provides the cure for the future, in a way, it's just a bigger version of Joel's lie. Like, how important is that one individual versus the millions that you don't love or whatever. Josh, you like The Last of Us?
I do. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I thought it might be. Yeah, it's the best. It was one I came to late as well because I didn't have a PlayStation 3, so I got the remastered version and I played through it. And it took me a while to get into it, to be fair, because maybe it's because I had such high expectations after hearing it's one of the best games of all time. Mm-hmm. And then it just completely won me over as soon as you properly get introduced to Ellie and Joel, because it takes quite a while for them to actually meet and start to break the ice. And I just think like the story itself is obviously amazing and well told, and I agree that, you know, that decision at the end, which isn't really a decision because control is taken away from you, that's such an interesting way to do it, because you're expecting, you know, a moral choice or something like that, and then you don't get it because Joel is his own character with his own agency, and that subverts your expectations as a player, and that's just amazing. It ends on a way that on a note that a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction just doesn't end on, you know, subverting your genre expectations all the way through. And it's got a killer multiplayer mode that always gets overlooked. Factions is awesome, and I'm still sorry, Dewey, because I got you killed. Your friends die. If you import your Facebook friends, you can get them killed. A lot of my friends died with me trying to, you know, survive and help my camp. That's awesome. And also, the combat in general is just really good.
Yeah.
All Naughty Dog games sort of kind of get, not trash for the combat, but people
always
say
they
don't get held up. Whereas I think there is a real mechanical sort of finesse to it that doesn't get the praise it deserves. Everything clicks together and you really feel like you're part of this scrappy, you know, survival world, trying to do your best quest to get through to the next position with about three bullets.
Let it be said that Last of Us's multiplayer is damn recommendable.
Damn right it
is. To this day. Also, as well, as one final sort of thing for that, the thing you were saying about, well, we both said about like the way that it makes a choice for you. I would hold The Last of Us up as a reason why a particular writer or a script, you know, should make a decision and let the player live with the ramifications of it. So for me, some of the best questions in gaming come from those moments, like something in Horizon, the end of Horizon, or The Last of Us, as opposed to like, if that was an actual in-game choice, do you save Ellie or not? I don't think it would have anywhere near as much impact because we would have just mattered, you know, it because it goes down one lane, that makes the conversation happen in a way that it wouldn't otherwise. Next one down is Dark Souls.
Blah,
blah, blah. The Dark Souls, which I think if we're going to sort of point to one game this generation that is the most influential, I think that it probably Souls. Yeah. Every other game is a Souls-like, whether it be behind the shoulder type stuff or even the side-scrolly ones like Blasphemous or Salt and Sanctuary. In terms of, I don't know, boiling it back down to its base elements, like it's almost like survival games, but really rigid combat mechanics. FromSoft obviously ended up doing something like Sekiro, which is more acrobatic, but that first Dark Souls, everyone's played it. Everyone has an opinion on Dark Souls. Ash loves it.
It's my best game of all time.
Best game of all time? Yeah,
I hate Dark Souls. I hate it. I respect, again, another one I respect, and another one that I think is a great game, and I can see all of its influences and the way that it puts itself together. Wonderful, beautiful, etc. But I just can't stand grind games. I can't stand it. It just makes me angry, and I find it pointless, and I find it exercises my rage
best
too much.
Games of the decade.
Best. With the... It's the best
Souls. Do you mean in terms of like, because it's true, you always go up and bang your head against this massive brick wall with a face until you can break through?
I just think difficulty for difficulty's sake is cheap, slightly, which is a bit of a controversial opinion. But I think making something difficult and getting to the end of it and having your big like satisfaction moment of being able to get through it and figuring it out is fantastic, but it is not the type of gameplay that I like.
Yeah, personally. And it's like, that's the thing. When I first fought Ornstein and Smile, which is like the second or third last boss, that is the most I've ever got completely just raged out and like had an existential crisis of like, this is the moment in my life when I can't beat something and I'm just done. But when I finally did it, I was like shaking with glee. And it was like unlike anything else. But like, you know, it's true. You can take that to the wrong degree kind of thing, because Sekiro, like that was the game where loads of headlines and critical different opinion pieces around the launch of Sekiro were like, okay, how much harder can we get? Yeah. Like this is just infuriating. But then under the proviso that if you finally surmount the difficulty, it'll be worth it.
I want games to be escapism. I want to go in and see loads of beautiful lore and wonderful landscapes, and we'd be able to explore and have all this storytelling given to me. And I think that the way that Dark Souls and Sekiro and From Software do like a meted out story that you've got to go and find and pick up things and piece together for yourself, I really like that. I do not like having to try and kill everything and like work my way through everything to get to that. Like, and I totally understand why people do like that and why others would enjoy it and why it's a fantastic way of having games. It's a fantastic thing to have those games, so you've got comparative stuff and to be able to go, what, I've had enough of that, I'm gonna go play something nice now. But for me, I just find it infuriating. I find it needless to a point of playing it. I'm like, why?
It's weird because obviously gaming is like an active medium. That sensation of like overcoming something, you can't get that from anything else. It's not, you don't have to struggle to turn the pages of a book or struggle to get through a film. Like it's something that only games can do. It's obviously different degrees based on different games. But Josh, you like the Souls.
I like Souls a lot. I'm conflicted on this because I don't know what I prefer more, Dark Souls or Bloodborne. But I'll stick with Dark Souls right now because I kind of agree with Ash that, you know, I can understand why people, you know, don't like it or bounce off it. At the same time, to me, Dark Souls isn't just sort of like, you know, the punishing difficulty or trying to overcome a challenge. It is about the world, and that's what sort of sets it apart for me. Going back and playing the remastered edition, I didn't want to slog through all the bosses again, so I used summons to beat Ornstein and Smough and stuff like that. I would just kind of, when I got to a brick wall, I just couldn't get past. I didn't have that sort of mentality that I did the first time around where I was just thinking, no, this is a challenge. I've got to overcome it, or otherwise, what am I? Yep. What is my sense of identity? Going back to it a second time with the remastered edition, everything else sort of clicked. I got why I enjoyed it so much the first time. It wasn't just the combat. It was, you know, going down into, I think it's the Great Hollow, and looking left and seeing that massive Hydra on the one side and looking right and seeing a bonfire there and just thinking, thank God, I do not need to die and have to go all the way back to the top. But there are so many intricately packed secrets into that game, and you really do feel like you're exploring and adventuring through a sort of deadly world that's trying to kill you, but the sort of, you know, gold at the end of the rainbow is always worth it. There's always something, you know, beautiful or grand or mythic to see,
yeah.
even if there is a good chance that it probably will try to kill you at the
That's
end
the
of
thing,
the day.
Like, no other developer has ever pushed me to the point of just break point where I was like, I hate this. I just want it done. I just want it to be done. It's like a chore. I just want to get this thing done. Mm. And then within a split second with the victory screen, like, that was all worth it. That was brilliant. I would do that all again.
Nah,
like, and it's just, it's the weirdest sensation.
Me ever getting a victory on the game, it's like, yeah, I showed you, but I'm not pleased by it. I'm always like,
that's done.
I've wasted all my time on this, and now I'm going to go do something else. But no, I think my main problem with Dark Souls is not so much it as a game, but it is an entity that people use for gatekeeping towards gaming. Like, oh, if you don't like Dark Souls, then you're not a real gamer.
You get it, man.
Yeah, if you can't get through this, are you a real gamer? And then using it like, oh, I did this, that, the other. I was like, just enjoy it for yourself. Like, just have a nice time. Yeah. Like,
I can see that as well. Even in the office, where a lot of people try to get into Dark Souls, and they sort of like have caveats for them not enjoying it. They're like, oh, I'll get into it eventually. I'm just stuck at the beginning. And they throw themselves at the wall over and over again. it's fair to just be like, you know what?
It's not for me.
This ain't for me, chief. This is not the type of game I like. And I do agree that there's sort of this weird kind of potentially gatekeepery thing of like, you know, it's a meme now, but there was a real mentality of you got to get good to enjoy this game.
Well, getting good is the sort of go-to forum response to literally anybody with any sort of FromSoft game. But that all, for me, like, you can kind of all put that towards just how influential it's been. You know, it is one of the best.
I feel like I should say, like, it deserves its place. Its place on, like, best games and all that sort of thing. Influential, something new, exciting, put together very well for what it is, but just not my cup of tea.
It is fascinating. Taking something like difficulty in video games used to be used to get money out of people in the arcades, and the idea of bringing it back to the fore and going, this game is incredibly hard and we intentionally made it that way, but you're only paying once. Like, that sort of everybody had to rethink difficulty and all that, those sort of things. This decade, now the last game we have might be the best game of all time, genuinely, Skyrim. I might say Skyrim is the best game ever.
Even I don't agree, and I'm the Elder Scrolls fangirl because Oblivion's the best game of all time.
Oh, that's
it doesn't fit on this list. But.
Nope.
It is, though. But no, Skyrim's fantastic. We all know Skyrim's fantastic.
It's the best game of all time.
It may be. I mean, in terms of this decade stuff, for me, that's Bethesda's last big high point. I don't think they've got anywhere near that, and that was back in 2011. And it is pure agency. Like, there's a reason they keep re-releasing it, and it always works. You can always go back to it. I just got the Switch version and restarting a new character all over again. I am doing different things. Like, you know, there's some locations you can go back to, but the amount of choices you have when you're building a character, when you're equipping a character. It's free form fantasy. Like, you can do whatever you want. If you have a remote sort of, you know, you like fantasy at all. For me, Skyrim is that game. I don't know how much, if you guys have gone back to it, like, since the initial release.
Well, this is what I want your guys' opinions on, because at the time, and still now, I still love Skyrim. I love everything it stands for, and I loved, you know, being back in 2011 and just plowing hours and hours into this game and loving every second of it, drinking up the atmosphere and, you know, engaging in every quest I could, trying out different builds. But even in spite of all the remasters and stuff, I've never really gone back to it in the same way that I did Oblivion or Fallout New Vegas as well. If this was my list personally, I'd swap it out.
New Vegas, and I was like, what?
I'd swap it out for New Vegas, just for me, that's sustained its interest with me all the way throughout my life. I go back to New Vegas and I find something new every time. I connect with something different. I listen to the soundtrack on the daily. And it's not that Skyrim isn't good. Skyrim is one of the best games of the generation and maybe of all time and certainly of the decade. Mm-hmm. But when I think about Bethesda games, not Bethesda games, but, you know, things that fall into that bracket, those big RPGs that I remember, Skyrim is amazing. It was amazing at the time.
Yeah.
But there are other ones that I would pick
I would still recommend, because you're doing a thing at the minute where you're going back to old games and old franchises and stuff. I would totally recommend you go back to Skyrim and see how you feel in prep for doing a bigger version of this.
I know. Much to go back to.
But you start a new character and see how you feel. For me, there's an immortal pull to the very beginning of that game where it just feels like you're stepping into a whole other realm. And there's just, like, it is that feeling. It's maybe cheesy, but, like, it is endless possibilities. And you can pick a direction and go, and you will find stuff. Like, the way they designed that Radiant Quest system to serve you things up, I do think really works. And then just the world design, the score, like, it is pretty magical. Like, I think it's lush. Ash, you're a fan.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I think it's beautiful. I think it's one of my favorite games ever, of course. Oblivion's always been my favorite because it's a bit weirder, I think. I think the one thing that Skyrim, I think, works in its favor but also holds it back slightly is that it is very classic high fantasy with dragons and all that business. I think if they bought more of the Oblivion Planes and that sort of thing, like doing the Daedric Prince quest is, like, ridiculously good. And the Dark Brotherhood and all that sort of thing, that, like, little flavor that Bethesda throw into their fantasy is so unique and so wonderful to dive into. I just wanted... I wanted like more of that. Like I wanted to eat that up.
In terms of like playability, like Skyrim was the one, unlike Oblivion, that I just went like straight away. I felt that it was just, you could just pick it up and go.
Yeah.
Whereas Oblivion was still a little bit kind of clumsy with its combat.
Yeah.
There's a way that Bethesda do combat models that is kind of just like flailing and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
But for me, like Skyrim sort of brought those things together. But yes, let us know down Let us know what you think down in the comments if you're watching the video version, or come find us on social media if you're listening on any of the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Bye bye. Goodbye. Good working.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.